Overhead Door Company, the original garage door company, serving you for over 90 years. Call 843-767-0028 or overheaddoorco.com. Overhead Door Company of Charleston, proud to open hour two of the Morrow Midday Show. This is the Morrow Midday Show.
But wait, there's more.
On ESPN Radio.
Yes, back again. Sadie's back. Tell a friend. Guess who's back? 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 Guess who's back?
Second hour of the Morrow Midday Show. Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Coming up, I'll give you my main takeaways from each NFL game yesterday in week four. Get to that in just a moment here on the Morrow Midday Show. And the Morrow Midday Show is brought to you by Baker Roofing. They have been in business for over 100 years. They're one of the largest, most recognized roofing contractors in the U.S. They provide residential and commercial roofing, and in 1915 were founded on the promise of always good work. So give our friend Matt Johnson, general manager of Baker Roofing Charleston, a call or head on over to bakerroofing.com for more information. You can check out their incredible history and see all the different roofing types that are available there online at bakerroofing.com. Over 100 years of always good work, Baker Roofing, you, the Morrow Midday Show, each and every day. Get to my thoughts on the NFL in just a moment. I came into the studio today. Good to be back here after a... felt like a long weekend. I don't know why. It wasn't a long weekend. It was a normal weekend. I guess... I don't know. If you're busy, does that make it a longer weekend or a shorter weekend? Because whenever there's Citadel football, you know, the way my schedule works is Friday. I spend Friday. Once I get off the air, I spend really the rest of Friday pretty much doing all my prep work for the broadcast. I'm a big prep guy, if you haven't been able to tell. And then Saturday, we have the game, and... you know, so you're at the stadium all day, and then went home, watched, caught up on all the games Saturday night, watched football yesterday. I don't know, something about it. It felt like it's been a while since we've done this. Maybe it's because I was off. I was only back for 2 days last week. Anyways, I came in today. I see a box of Cheerios here on the floor. So I guess Scott's bringing his snacks. He's eating Cheerios during the show. Fine with me. Now, here's what I like to see. I imagine he's not bringing milk in with him and doing like a bowl in commercial breaks. I imagine he's just picking right out of the box and having a handful of Cheerios throughout the morning to get him going. Now, I've always said I'm no breakfast guy. In fact, I think breakfast is the biggest scam. I think we have all been scammed. They tell you breakfast is the most important meal of the day. You know who came up with that? General Mills came up with that idea. The general himself. So I'm not a big breakfast guy. I haven't eaten breakfast in years. Every once in a while, I'll eat a breakfast. Right? I was at a wedding last week, right? The big thing the next morning, you get together, you have a breakfast or a brunch. I'll do that every once in a while. But otherwise, during the work week, I don't know. I haven't had breakfast on a work day in years. Breakfast is the biggest scam. So when I eat my cereal, I eat it like a snack. I eat my cereal between meals or late at night. I eat it right out of the box. I couldn't tell you the last time I had cereal with milk. In fact, growing up, I didn't even put milk in the bowl. My brothers used to make fun of me. Makes the cereal soggy. I don't need milk in the bowl. The cereal's good enough as it is. It's already so sugary and everything. Which, by the way, right, they tell you breakfast is the most important meal of the day, and then what do you eat for breakfast? You either eat sugary cereal like that, or you eat, like, bacon. You clog your arteries with whatever you want to eat, some sort of breakfast sandwich, all your carbs or your bacon. All these scammers out here selling us on the idea of breakfast. Anyways, if I get hungry, maybe I'll dip into this box of Cheerios. I was never a big Cheerios guy. So many options on the cereal aisle. You could get, you know, the chocolate. They're like desserts. And you go with the Cheerios. Joe, are you a cereal guy?
I kind of got out of it, but yeah. I ate cereal a lot, especially growing up.
Are you a Cheerios guy?
More the Honey Nut Cheerios.
Yeah, I mean, that's better. They're the classic. Don't get me wrong. If you had to do like a Mount Rushmore of cereals, you don't even need a Mount Rushmore. If you had to make a list, I think Cheerios is probably number one. Like, that's the cereal. But I think it's more built off of reputation. I think there's a lot better cereals out there.
Supposedly healthier than most of them.
Yeah, I guess that's the big thing. They say it lowers the cholesterol. And that's important. Like in Liar Liar, they say to Jim Carrey, like, what's up? My cholesterol. Whatever that line is. Right? You could eat Cheerios to lower that cholesterol. Or you could just skip breakfast altogether like I do because it's not the most important meal. You don't need breakfast. But if I get hungry, good to know we got some Cheerios stashed in the studio. I like it. We'll get to my thoughts on the NFL. You can always join the conversation, 843-721-9500, to give us a call. Let's go to the phones first. Billy is with us. Billy, what's going on? How are you?
Oh, good. How you doing, Luke?
Good. What's up?
A couple of things. First of all, I guess the games now, with the way the SEC is looking, Carolina's chances to win three more possible games are starting to look a little better than what they did. But I'm still not impressed with Doty. I think Nolan should be the starter. The offense just seems like they've connected better with him when he's been in there.
Yeah,
from what I've seen.
I get that. My thing would be, for South Carolina, what's the ceiling this year? Like, a great year this year to me would be six wins and get to a bowl. And
that's how I feel, because after losing the way we've lost the last two seasons, I would think six wins and a bowl would be improvement. If not, maybe just an upset along the way with five wins just to make a mark in it as you see that maybe he can turn it around.
Yeah, I agree. I think that would make for a good season. But my point then being is this is year one of Shane Beamer. I think it's better long-term for South Carolina to play Doty and either allow him to grow or you determine that, you know what, this isn't our guy. We need to go elsewhere at the quarterback position.
I got you.
Because otherwise, you know, otherwise you go to the grad student. He's done after this year. Is there a big difference this year? Maybe if he does provide you, say, an extra win or two, is there really a big difference this year between winning four games or six or winning five games in six? I'd rather develop the younger guy or at least see what I have that in that younger guy in Luke Doty.
Well, and you're right, too. The bonehead penalties have cost us in points. I mean, those penalties just come back and hurt you. And they're lucky they did win the game Saturday because they were doing everything they could to try to find a way to lose them. But for the defense, they probably would have lost that game because the offense just is not impressive enough. Another thing, too, is if I had been a betting man this year, I would have been a millionaire by now because I bet on Oregon. I picked Oregon to win Saturday. I picked on NC State one night last week before. And right now I'm sitting at 5-0. Like, I don't know what to do. I don't know if I'll go back in and try to bet on a couple games for the end of the year or what.
Yeah. Well, hey, you call us. Tell us at the end of the week if you like something this Saturday then. See if that heater continues for you.
I'll see. One other thing. How ironic would it be after this season going into if ends up being coming down to the Clemson game whether Carolina goes to a bowl game or not? Wouldn't that be crazy?
Yeah, it would be great. I hope that's the case. You know what? I've been meaning to do this, and I appreciate the call, Billy. I have to reach out to somebody. I'm curious. I'm not going to be so bold to tell you that South Carolina will beat Clemson today. I do not believe that would be the case. I have not been all that impressed with South Carolina either. In fact, Clemson and South Carolina have been very similar to me in their styles and how they played. Their defenses have been good. South Carolina's been carried by their defense. That was the case again on Saturday. Offenses have struggled. Young quarterbacks. And both teams committing way too many penalties. Two of the most penalized teams in the country. You got to cut that out. So they're pretty similar in terms of their style or where they've struggled this year. But I still think Clemson, you know, is the better team. They would win. But my whole point being, I'd be curious to see what that spread would be. Because at the start of the year, it's what, close to 30 points. You know that number's coming down. And I'm impatient, too impatient to wait another 2 months here to find out when we get to game time what that number. I'm curious right now with how Clemson's playing. And there's a website that you can, they'll tell you any point spread. So I have to go look this up. Because I'm very curious today what Vegas would put that point spread at if South Carolina and Clemson were playing this Saturday. Clemson, obviously vulnerable. They're playing a lot of close games. But South Carolina hasn't shown me a ton that would give me the hope that they could still win a game like that. When it comes to the quarterbacks, I get that idea. Look, Zeb Nolan should be better. He should be more comfortable. He's 23 years old. We've been talking a lot about Sam Darnold. Sam Darnold just turned 24 at the start of the season. All right, so that's how old Zeb is. And that he's older than guys in the NFL. He's playing in the SEC. He played in the Power 5 before. And then was a starter at the FCS level. Now he's here. So I get that. He should be more experienced and more prepared because he is more experienced. He should be better prepared, should keep the offense more on scale, all those things. It's the veteran quarterback versus the rookie. But it's similar to like the Patriots this year. They had a similar decision to make. Do we roll with Cam Newton again? Or do we just let Mac Jones get started and start to develop this guy? What's the difference? Cam Newton, in his experience, do you think that could add an extra win or two that Mac Jones couldn't? Okay. But it doesn't make that big of a difference this year for the Patriots if they were to win, just to throw out random numbers, 7 games compared to 9. Or is it better off to just try to win along the way, but also figure out what you have in this young quarterback, develop this young guy? And Mac Jones looked really good last night. But that's how I view the Gamecocks. Has Luke Doty been great? No, I don't think Zeb Nolan was all that great either. But even if Nolan were to give you a better chance this particular Saturday just because of his experience, I'm still rolling with Luke Doty. Year one of Shane Beamer. I don't care so much about the record. I care about the development. Get this kid ready moving forward. Or you find out, you know what, this really isn't it. We have to develop somebody else. We have to go recruit a little bit stronger here. Let's go look in the transfer portal, whatever it may be. So I'm rolling with Doty. I have a buddy named Doty. That's what I'm rolling with Luke Doty the rest of the way. And let's see what you have in him, good or bad, this season. Every Monday in the show, I give you my takeaways from every NFL game. Here's what I find interesting, is that if I were to ask you, who's the best team in the NFL, who would you answer with? I think if I asked a bunch of football fans that question, I'd get a lot of different answers. If you were going off of best records, the Arizona Cardinals are 4-0. Big win against the Rams yesterday. Maybe they should lead that conversation. But it was also just 2 weeks ago that they beat the Vikings because Minnesota missed an extra point and then missed a field goal, which, as a Vikings fan, I'll continue to remind you, the analytics would tell you you have a 90% chance of making that field goal. And that was in Arizona. The Cardinals were lucky to get out of there with a victory. Otherwise, they would have a loss to their record as well. And then you look elsewhere and say, well, the Buccaneers won the Super Bowl last year. Yeah, and they're 3-1, but they got blown out by the Rams last week. And then you say, well, you know, the Packers are 3-1. They were in the NFC title game last year. That's true. They are 3-1. But they got blown out week one by the Saints. And you say, well, the Cowboys, right, they're off to a 3-1 start. They look pretty good in the NFC East. But there is still that one loss for Dallas. And it was a close loss to the Buccaneers. But are we all that sold on the Cowboys? Much like the Panthers. The Panthers are 3-1. But are we really talking about Carolina as one of the best teams in the NFL? And the last team in the NFC you'd bring up was probably the Rams. But they just got blown out yesterday by the Cardinals at home in a game they were favored in by almost a touchdown. Then you look at the AFC and you think like, okay, well, the Buffalo Bills are 3-1. Yeah, but they lost to the Steelers, who are 1-3. And then you look at the AFC North and you think, well, the Bengals, they're 3-1. Well, again, this Vikings fan will remind you that that first win probably should have been a loss against Minnesota, if not for a questionable fumble. Then they looked terrible against the Bears and lost to the Bears. Or, well, you know, the Ravens are 3-1, but similar, you know, Baltimore lost to the Raiders, who are playing well this year. So maybe you'd say the Ravens, they have a good loss. That's a big thing in college football when we compare resumes. We compare wins and losses, right? And, well, it was a good loss, if there's such a thing. So the Ravens, they may have the best loss of the 3-1 teams. You know, the Browns are 3-1. But they lost to the Chiefs and only beat the three teams they beat have a combined like 3 wins. And then you get tonight's game with the Raiders playing at 3-0. If they win tonight, I mean, do we trust that the Raiders are the best team in the NFL? The Broncos, we thought maybe they're 3-0. They just got blown out yesterday at home, scored only 7 points against the Ravens. My point in all this being, there's not a clear-cut top team right now. You can rely still on the Buccaneers based off of the fact they won the Super Bowl last year. And with Tom Brady, just like last night, you imagine they'll always find a way to win. But is there a clear-cut favorite right now in the NFL? The Chiefs are 2-2. The Rams just got blown out. The Patriots were blown out last week. Now, I think that's the great part about the NFL. You have to cut through some of that nonsense because the cliche is any given Sunday. When's the last time a team ran the table and won the Super Bowl? Right? You have to go back to 1972. The Patriots got close a few years ago. But point being, a team is going to lose. A team's going to have at least one bad week along the way. The Patriots last year were 7-5 and then clicked and won the Super Bowl. Who is the best team in the NFL right now? That's a tough question to answer. I think I would still trust the Buccaneers the most. I don't think I'm changing my thought process too much 1 month into the season. I think I still trust the Chiefs in the AFC as sloppy as they have been this year. But it's also what makes the NFL great. Is that when you look at all the best teams, right, they have a loss. You look at college football, we thought that could have happened this past Saturday. Instead, Alabama blew out Ole Miss. Georgia blew out Arkansas. And it's like, no, you know what? These really are the best teams, and they can't really be challenged. in the NFL, it's like, hey, the Buccaneers are the best team in the league. Then they get blown up by the Rams. Okay, now the Rams are the best team, and then they get blown up by the Cardinals. And you think, okay, the Cardinals are the best team. Yeah, but they probably should have lost to Minnesota 2 weeks ago. We'll see how they do this week against the Niners. It's the great part about the NFL. It's like this never-ending cycle as you try to figure out who the best teams are, and you know they keep losing every once in a while. We'll see how the Raiders look tonight on Monday Night Football. I'll give you my official pick later on, but a big game against the Chargers. The Raiders are the last team standing in the AFC and the Cardinals in the NFC. Remember, last year the Steelers went 11-0, and there were quite a few teams that were still undefeated at the midway point. This year, October just started. If the Raiders lose tonight, we'll have one undefeated team left. So college football has been chaotic. So, too, has the first month of the NFL season. The NFL season has been pretty crazy as well. You don't know who to trust just yet. We need more information. And with that, when we come back, I'll give you my thoughts on week four of the NFL season. I'll give you my main takeaways from every game from the NFL yesterday. And we'll do it next. It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
This is the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
I don't want another heartbreak. I don't need another turn to cry. No, I don't want to learn the hard way. Baby, hello. Oh, no. Goodbye. But you got me like a rocket shooting straight across the sky. It's the way you love me. It's a feeling like this. It's centrifugal motion. It's perpetual bliss. It's that pivotal moment. It's
coming up, I'll give you my takeaway from all the games week four of the NFL yesterday here on the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. This is the second time we've had this song in the last couple weeks. I got to tell you, though, it's a jam. I gotta admit, I even also have to admit that I went so far as I was doing my prep Friday for the Citadel VMI game. Friday night, I like to usually go with some kind of like relaxing music. I'm not going to throw on Metallica. I like to keep it loose. I'm doing my notes. I'm reading things. I'm jotting things down. I have to admit, this is one of the songs I put on as I was getting ready Friday night. I don't know why. It was in my head. It's a good song. And I threw some Faith Hill on the other night as I got ready for the Citadel and VMI.
I think it was a different Faith Hill song that we played on the show as a bumper like a few weeks ago.
There's some great lyrics, though, in this song. Words I don't even know what she's talking about. What's that one? Centrifugal motion? Centrifugal? I don't even know what that word is. I don't think I've ever heard that word before other than in that song.
You need a dictionary, or maybe she writes with a thesaurus nearby.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Then she follows that up by saying, it's perpetual bliss. That's a good phrase. It's that pivotal moment. It's subliminal. Those are good words for a country song. That's like, personal favorite if you listen to the show. You know, Tom Petty, when he used to struggle to come up with songs, Rick Rubin, who was this great record producer, used to take, we had these growing up, you know, you have those magnets on the refrigerator door of just letters, and people would spell out, like, messages sometimes, or just people's name, whatever. You'd play with those magnets, he had all the different letters. When Tom Petty would struggle to come up with words for a song, that was Rick Rubin's trick, and they would put those letters out. Or maybe there were words, because letters could be hard. But anyways, you play around with them, and you just move them around and come up with different phrases and say, oh, that sounds pretty good. Let's put that in the song. And that's what they did when he was doing the Wildflowers album in 94.
Rick Rubin also did some great stuff with Johnny Cash, his last few albums.
Rick Rubin's the best.
And he's a sports and a wrestling fan, too.
Is he?
He was actually one of the guys who bankrolled the old Smoky Mountain wrestling promotion.
How about that? Very interesting guy. He's got the big beard. He's balding, but he's got the long hair. Never wears shoes. Really laid-back guy, but fantastic. He's done all sorts of things. He's worked with the Red Hot Chili Peppers. He's worked with Johnny Cash. He did a lot of rap stuff. I think he worked with the Beastie Boys. He was all over the map. He's worked with, like, Dr. Dre, who's performing in the halftime show. So anyways, enough about Rick Rubin. Every Monday on the show, we come in, I give you my thoughts, my takeaways from all the games in the NFL. Yesterday was week four of the NFL season, so yes, we have an extra week this year, but essentially we're a quarter of the way through the NFL season. Let's run through these games from yesterday. I give you my big takeaway from week four of the NFL season.
Jacksonville Jaguars at Cincinnati Bengals.
This is going back to Thursday night. You know what? The big takeaway I'll focus on now, and maybe we shouldn't because we are a sports show, but did you see the video that came out of Urban Meyer over the weekend? Not good. Not what I would want from my football coach. If you haven't seen it, Urban stuck around in Ohio after they played the Cincinnati Bengals. He's got a bar up there. Obviously, coached at Ohio State. He stuck around to hang out with some buddies for a friend's birthday. There's a video making the rounds of a pretty blonde woman, much younger, who, let's say, is grinding up on Urban Meyer at the bar. Not a good look. Meanwhile, Urban's wife was tweeting about how she was visiting the grandkids and hanging out with them on Friday, and that Urban deserved a night out. Long story short, not a great look for Urban. It's his own personal life. You'd say, who cares? But my whole thing being, if I'm the 0-4 Jaguars and I have extra prep time here, right? It's almost like a mini bye week. You have the weekend. And I know football coaches should have a life, but I don't know if I want to see my coach, you know, glossy-eyed in a bar with a blonde rubbing up on him on a Saturday night instead of giving me Bill Belichick and Andy Reid crushing film on that weekend to get better, right? You just lost your 0-4. If I'm a Jaguars fan, I don't know if I like that. If I'm Mrs. Meyer, I don't know, but that's a whole other story. That's their own personal life. They can sort that out from a football perspective. After you lose Thursday night, I don't know if I want to see my coach out hanging out in the bars all weekend instead of trying to get his team better when he's given some extra time to try to prepare for the next game. So that's my takeaway at this point from Thursday night.
New York Giants at New Orleans Saints.
This was one of the games I picked on Friday. By the way, the picks did really well once again. We were 5-1 in college football. We are on a roll in college football this year. We have gone 16-4 in college football picks the last 3 weeks. The NFL, I've struggled. I'm about 500. So overall this year, we're at 56%, 32-25 on picks. We went 7-4 this past weekend. Did really well once again, especially in college football. I took the Giants as a touchdown underdog in New Orleans, and they won the game outright in overtime. Because the Saints, now while the Saints did move the football on yesterday, they still struggled to score points. Offensively, entering week four, the Saints have the fewest yards in the league. I don't think you would guess that. Their offense has struggled. And yesterday, though, it was the Giants' offense that was the big story. Daniel Jones had over 400 yards, multiple touchdowns. He has cut down on the interceptions. He has played much better this year. Hasn't showed up yet in the record, but this was a big win. To go to New Orleans for Daniel Jones, get their first win of the season, to do it in overtime. Saquon Barkley had a big game as he looked a little healthier. And the Giants, I may have counted them out too soon in that division. Look, they're only 1-3, but they led in the fourth quarter in their last two losses. They beat the Saints on the road. That was a good win for them. And Daniel Jones has looked much better these last couple games than the rest of his career. Big win for the Giants on the road.
Kansas City Chiefs at Philadelphia Eagles.
This was a big win for the Chiefs. Now, they ended up closing as a 9-point favorite. So you may say, big whoop. They won by 12. They kind of should have. They beat the Eagles. The Eagles are a lousy team. Yes, but what I saw from the Chiefs was a cleaner game. Now, Philadelphia did end up scoring 30 points. They got two touchdowns in the fourth quarter, so a little garbage time there for the Eagles. Jalen Hurts put up big numbers. But if you watch the game, it was close for a little while. For the first half, I thought maybe the Chiefs would sweat it out, and then they turned down the afterburners. But the point being for Kansas City, that's what you had to do. The Chiefs were 2-12 against the spread the last 14 games. And if you're not a gambler, you may say, who cares? But the point being, they were not winning like they were supposed to. And these last couple games, too many turnovers this year. They had four turnovers last week. They've been too sloppy. They fall behind early and then expect Mahomes to lead them back. So we saw yesterday from the Chiefs what we should have, and that was good. They scored 42 points on the road. They led for the majority of that game. They never fell behind by more than 3 points, I think. They didn't dig themselves a hole. They took care of the football. They were a little more disciplined. That's what you need to see from Kansas City. That was a chance, even on the road. That's a get-right game. You go up against the Eagles, that's a game you should win, even on the road. And they played well putting things together. Because for the first 3 weeks, the Chiefs looked very sloppy. Now they have to start to round into form to play, much like Kansas City, what we saw from them last year or the last couple of years.
Houston Texans at Buffalo Bills.
Not much to say here. My goodness, Texans. The Bills win 40-0. That's the main take. This was one of those games, no use in watching. I'll say this about the Bills, though. The one takeaway from this game, they beat the Dolphins by 35. They beat the Washington football team by 22. They just beat the Texans by 40. Maybe not the three best teams. Maybe not a murderer's row lineup. But it's hard. The NFL is a one-score game. If you win three straight games by over 20 points, That is pretty good. They lost week one against the Steelers, which in hindsight now only looks even worse. But since then, three blowout victories. They'll really be tested this Sunday night on the road. They haven't gone on the road in 3 weeks. They'll go on the road to Kansas City. Then they go on the road to the Titans. That's Monday Night Football. So the Bills are on national TV the next 2 weeks against two playoff teams in the AFC. Let's see what we have in this Bills team. But three blowout wins like that in a row, not easy to do in the NFL.
Carolina Panthers at Dallas Cowboys.
The Panthers made this look much closer in the fourth quarter. It was a nip and tuck game for the first half, and I thought, man, we're going to have ourselves a great game here. And then in the third quarter, the Cowboys put it away. And the Panthers really struggle in the third quarter for whatever reason. They come out of the locker room. They haven't made the good enough adjustments. They got outscored 20-0 in that third quarter. They could not move the football. And what I warned about Sam Darnold heading into the weekend kind of played out. Sam Darnold played well in the first half. He had two rushing touchdowns. The Panthers were leading at halftime. But once they fell behind in the second half, he had two interceptions, and there were two bad interceptions. It was clearly the worst game for Darnold with the Panthers. Hubbard wasn't bad, but he only had 57 yards of rushing. Sam Darnold was their best rusher of the day. He had the two rushing touchdowns. And in the end, Sam Darnold posted a QBR of 51. 50 is average. So he's essentially an average quarterback yesterday, which goes back to his time with the Jets and was a step back from how he played the first 3 weeks. Darnold with a lead, any quarterback could say this. But with a lead, he's a much different quarterback than when they're trailing. And yesterday, they were right there in the first half. He was playing really well. They fall behind in the second half. He throws a couple of bad interceptions that seals their fate, and the Panthers lose on the road. Now they're still just 3-1. They're playing good football. They're even talking about McCaffrey potentially returning this week, which seems a little too soon. And on the flip side, the Cowboys, that is still a good win for them. To beat a 3-0 team in their building, to score 36 points, Dak Prescott with four more touchdowns yesterday. I think the Cowboys have a ceiling, but they are getting a lot of turnovers on defense. They're scoring points on offense. They're clearly the team to beat in that division.
Cleveland Browns at Minnesota Vikings.
All right, give me just 60 seconds here because I am a distraught Vikings fan. What else is new? But the Vikings are now 1-3. First, let me touch on the Browns real quick. Baker Mayfield, I thought, looked lousy yesterday. I mean, they only scored 14 points in that game. Indoors. I know it's on the road, but you're playing indoors against the Vikings. Baker Mayfield missed a lot of throws, completed only half of his passes. If I'm the Browns, I am not giving him a big extension. I am not going to strap myself with this quarterback. All right, let him walk, and I'll take my chances elsewhere. He's a good quarterback, not great. He had a chance to put the game away yesterday with a wide-open Odell Beckham, and he missed him by 5 yards. Wide open. Down the sideline. Walk-in touchdown to seal the game. He wasn't even close. If I'm the Browns, I'm moving on from Baker when the time comes. I'll take my chances elsewhere. I think that's why the Browns have a ceiling, because of that quarterback position. But real quick on the Vikings. I could spend all day complaining about them. Give me just 60 seconds. Because the Vikings are 1-3. They are one of just two teams, the only in the NFC, to have a positive point differential, despite having a losing record. They have outscored their opponents this year, and they're 1-3. They lost their first two games by a total of 4 points. They lost yesterday by 7 points as their drive ended at the 25-yard line. They were 25 yards away from tying that game at the end of the game. It's been very frustrating, but this is what the Vikings do. They are better than their record indicates. I think the big difference is the quarterback position. Kirk Cousins did not play well yesterday. And in those two close losses, he led them on field goal drives to tie the game instead of touchdown drives to win the game. I think that's the difference between this team and others, right? This defense has played really well the last 2 weeks for the Vikings. Kirk Cousins is a good quarterback, not a great quarterback. He can only get you so far. Couldn't get them in the end zone yesterday. We'll get to the Patriots coming up because I think they're in a similar position as Minnesota right now. But the Vikings are 1-3 despite outscoring their opponents. That's all you need to know about the Vikings. They are so close and yet so far now 1-3 this season. Makes it very frustrating to watch this team.
Detroit Lions at Chicago Bears.
Not much to say about this game either. The Lions are really bad. They had a fumble inside the 10 when Jared Goff went up to the offensive line to try to change the play, and the center thought he wanted the football. So he snapped it. Goff wasn't ready or looking. It hits Goff in the midsection and ricochets right into the hands of a Bears defensive player. I mean, you just can't make some of this stuff up. The Lions are just a bad team. They're now 0-4. For the Bears, Justin Fields played better, but still not great. And he's also still not getting help from his coaching staff. Justin Fields attempted more than half of his passes, more than 10 yards downfield. This was his second career start. He attempted more passes over 20 yards than within 5 yards. What are you doing with your rookie? Give him some screens. Give him some quick hitters. Help him get settled and comfortable. The Bears are not doing that. So they win. They beat the Lions as they should. I still was not impressed with Justin Fields. He played better, had a nice connection with Mooney all day, but there's still a lot left to be desired for Chicago. They get the win, though, and get back to 500.
Tennessee Titans at New York Jets.
This was another pick I gave you on Friday. I nailed the New York teams this week. The Jets were a touchdown underdog at home against the Titans. That was one of the picks on Friday. Take the Jets. And they ended up winning outright in overtime. Now, Zach Wilson, this was his best game as a pro. He started off slow, played much better after halftime. They scored 20 points in the second half. And I thought this would be a chance for Zach Wilson. You look at Zach Wilson's the start to his career this year. They go on the road week one to the Panthers. And you have the Darnold versus Wilson storyline, his first game in the NFL, a lot of pressure, and a Panthers defense that still is top 10 in the league. Week two, he goes up against Bill Belichick. Good luck. Week three, he goes up against the Denver Broncos, who also have one of the best defenses so far. Then week four, you're back home, and you get the Titans coming to town, who last year had the worst defense in the league. So I thought this was a chance for Zach Wilson. You're a month in, you're at home, you've got a couple games under your feet, and now you have the Titans coming to your building. This was a chance for Zach Wilson, and he played his best game so far. Was he great? No. But was he a lot better than the first few games? Yes. On the flip side for the Titans, they were down their two best wide receivers. Robert Saleh and the Jets defense lit up Tannehill all day. They sacked him 7 times. The Titans were very one-dimensional yesterday, and that's a bad loss for them on the road to the Jets. But if you go back and you look, Mike Vrabel, his teams usually lose a game like this every year. They lost to the Bengals. I think that was 2 years ago, and the Bengals had one win. They usually lose one game to one of the worst teams in the league that you wonder, how could they lose that game? They're not a playoff team. They lost to the Jets. That's what we'll be saying. But the Titans usually lose a game like this and rebound, especially this year. That division is terrible. The Titans will be fine. For the Jets, you at least saw something from your quarterback yesterday in Zach Wilson that gives you hope and belief for the future, as hopefully he continues to get better.
Indianapolis Colts at Miami Dolphins.
There are only so many games I can watch in a Sunday. Now, I have NFL Game Pass, and I go back and I rewatch the games throughout the week that are at least of interest. I may not get to all the games. I try to have somewhat of a life. But this is one of those games that I really did not see very much of yesterday, and I probably won't go back to watch. These were two teams that both needed to win. Their season was kind of on the line yesterday. The Colts got the win, so now both them and the Dolphins are 1-3. I'll say this about the Dolphins. They're in a bad spot. Jacoby Brissett looked terrible. They do not have a quarterback on that roster. Tua is not the answer. This was a Dolphins team that won 10 games a year ago, got rid of Ryan Fitzpatrick, let him walk, and believed that they would be better this year and be a playoff team this year. Now they're 1-3. The offense is lousy. There's not as much talent on that roster as they thought. I believe the Dolphins would take a step back this year because they were a very fortunate team last year when you look at the turnovers they were getting. And they are taking that step back, but they've been even more disappointing than I anticipated. And someone's going to have to answer for it. They won 10 games last year, thought they'd be better this year. They look really bad a month in. I like Brian Flores as a coach, but you know Chris Greer, the GM, has botched some draft picks. Somebody in that Dolphins front office has to start to get a little bit nervous because this has been a really bad start to what they were hoping would be a special season.
Washington football team at Atlanta Falcons.
My goodness, Falcons fans. Right now, as a Vikings fan, I feel like I can relate to Falcons fans. The Falcons were up multiple scores in the fourth quarter at home to a backup quarterback, and they lost. And did you see the touchdown McKissick scored to go ahead in the final minute? What an absurd play. Taylor Heinicke is rolling out left. He throws it across the entire field to the right side, and nobody is around McKissick, and he runs it in for like 40 yards. Embarrassing. Matt Ryan played well. I thought the Falcons offensively, this would be an opportunity for them to really show something against that defense. They scored 30 points. They played well, but just crushing. Right? What the lyrics, the Who once sang, new boss, same as the old boss, similar case here. Or Tower of Power. Right, the more things change, the more they stay the same. Same idea with the Falcons. New coach, new players, doesn't matter. They just find ways to lose games. It's the sign of a bad team. And how about that two-minute drill? Really about a 30-second drill. Matt Ryan's a veteran. What is he doing scrambling there on that play, using up all the clock? And then they had a spike. It left them with 3 seconds left. And he only got, what was it, like 5-10 yards in the run? Wasn't worth it. You're a veteran quarterback. What are you running for without any timeouts, running down the center of the field in the final 20 seconds? When a field goal, you need a touchdown, not a field goal. Terrible execution in the fourth quarter for the Falcons. They cough up another game. I feel for you, Falcons fans. I know what it's like. It's very frustrating. New coach, new players, doesn't matter. This team just continues since the Super Bowl. They find ways to lose games.
Seattle Seahawks at San Francisco 49ers.
Russell Wilson found a way to avoid what would have been his first three-game losing streak. The Seahawks, I talked to, you know, people in the betting world, they said that's the play. Take the seat. There's no way Russell Wilson will lose three in a row. And he had three touchdowns yesterday and found a way to win. But the big story here out of this game is the 49ers. Jimmy Garoppolo gets injured. Trey Lance comes in. And Trey Lance did not look good. He had a touchdown to Deebo Samuel that was more about the scheme. Deebo was wide open for his 75-yard touchdown down the right sideline. That was the only completion Trey Lance had in his first six pass attempts. He's a classic young mobile quarterback where he looks to run before throw. He'll make plays with his legs but not arm. And there's a reason why Kyle Shanahan said after the game, yeah, there's a reason why he's the number two quarterback when asked about Trey Lance. Shanahan was very straightforward about his rookie quarterback in the postgame conference. Did not relay very promising thoughts. But the story is Jimmy Garoppolo. This is the issue with Jimmy Garoppolo. You can't rely on him. He got injured yesterday, unavailable. And when you are already on thin ice trying to hold on to your job, it's like somebody who's in hot water at work and they take a vacation. It's like, yeah, this probably isn't the time. Now, I know Jimmy Garoppolo didn't choose to get injured, but bad timing on the injury where there's already this concern, is Trey Lance going to take over for that starting job? And then Jimmy Garoppolo says, right this way, Mr. Lance, right? The second half is yours. And if Trey Lance led back the Niners, led them back for a win, I don't think he'd give back that starting job. But Trey Lance, fortunately for Jimmy Garoppolo, did not play great. This is a concern with Jimmy G, though. Unreliable. He's injured every year. You just can't count on him to be out there. To be a franchise quarterback, you have to be able to rely on them knowing they'll be out there on the field. We'll see what happens with the Niners quarterback situation moving forward now with Garoppolo's injury.
Arizona Cardinals at Los Angeles Rams.
So, I broadcast for the Citadel. Hindsight being 2020, I talked to Coach Thompson, I think it was last week when he said it, maybe 2 weeks ago, but he looked back at it and said, you know what, I think Coastal Carolina beat us twice when they lost to Charleston Southern week two. Since then, the Citadel has played better football their last two games. And for the Rams, I think it was that opposite, where a game affects you the next week, but in this case, a positive game. They played the most perfect game against the Buccaneers. They had just one penalty. They beat the Bucs at home. There were all sorts of stars there. I think this was the emotional letdown the next week. Sometimes a game can affect you the following week, win or lose. Sometimes you lose to a team, they beat you up so good, you lose the next week. Sometimes you beat a team, you exerted so much energy, so much time, right? You put everything you had into that game, you have a letdown the next week. I think that was the case with the Rams yesterday. But for the Cardinals, huge win. Arizona now the only undefeated team left in the NFC. This is the biggest win of Cliff Kingsbury's coaching career, and I don't think that's hyperbolic. He beat only two ranked teams in college. In the NFL, he hasn't had a winning season yet, and he was winless against McVay and Shanahan with blowouts. McVay has always blown out the Cardinals. Now he beat them, and he blew them out in their building and at their own game, where Kyler Murray outplayed Stafford, where the Cardinals were the team that scored 37 points. That was a big win for Arizona. I'm believing more and more in them. I still don't think they're a team that can go win the Super Bowl, but I do think they are better than I thought they'd be this year. But I'll say this. Here's my warning about the Cardinals. Number one, the last time the Cardinals were 4-0 was 2012. They finished that year 5-11. So don't get too excited just yet. Number two, Cliff Kingsbury's teams have gotten off to hot starts the last couple years. What happens is the game becomes more physical the second half of the year. When it gets colder, when you're a little more worn down, Kyler Murray is real fresh right now. It's early in the season. He's running all around. By December, he'll have been beaten up a little bit more. You have to be able to run the football a little bit more. And the reason why the Cardinals always struggle the second half of the season, the theory is because they're just not a physical team. They'd rather spread you out and throw it all over the field. And come December or playoff football, you can't win like that. You got to win with some defense. You got to win with some running game. So the Cardinals are 4-0 right now, but I want to see how they do second half of the year. But this was a big-time win for Kyler Murray and Cliff Kingsbury. It surprised me. They looked really good yesterday against the Rams in that battle for the top spot in the best division.
Pittsburgh Steelers at Green Bay Packers.
The Steelers, I thought this was a good upset spot because Mike Tomlin is so good as an underdog. The Steelers play to the level of their competition. They're at their best when they're doubted, and then they play their worst when they should, you know, easily beat a team. They did not play great yesterday. They had an early lead. I thought they'd hang in there. The offsides call and the blocked field goal I thought was incorrect, and that really swung the game. That's not to take anything away from Green Bay. The Packers were the better team. They outplayed the Steelers. They beat Pittsburgh yesterday. The Steelers now have lost three in a row. Here's the most concerning part about Pittsburgh. It happened again yesterday twice. Fourth down, and Ben Roethlisberger, on a fourth down play, checks it. He swings it off to his running back, giving his team no chance. You know, it's not fourth and one. Yesterday was like a fourth and six. Last week was a fourth and 10. What are you doing? You got to give yourself a chance to pick up that fourth down. Give your offense a chance. Ben Roethlisberger looks like he is so afraid of the football. He looks like somebody who wants to get rid of the football so quickly. He's taken too much of a beating. He's too old for this. He does not want that football in his hands. Yesterday, the big play in the fourth quarter, I think it was their final possession. They're down 10, trying to make something happen. Fourth and six, he swings it out to the running back behind the line of scrimmage. Are you kidding? Throw it beyond the sticks. Roethlisberger does not want the football in his hands. The Steelers' offense is a real problem. That's what's going to hold them back. The defense is still solid. I was wrong about Roethlisberger, though. He has nothing left. He just doesn't want the football. It's hard to win games when your quarterback doesn't even want to hold on to it for over 2 seconds. The Packers get the win. They're 3-1. By the way, Green Bay has been outscored this year. The Vikings have outscored their opponents. They're only 1-3. The Packers have been outscored this year. They're 3-1. That's football.
Baltimore Ravens at Denver Broncos.
This was a spot for the Broncos to try to prove themselves, and they really failed. They scored only 7 points. Now, Bridgewater, their quarterback, did leave with a concussion in the second half. But the Broncos are 3-0, or were 3-0, and if you want to be taken seriously, you got to give me at least a better performance than this. They lost by 3 scores at home to the Ravens. And the Ravens are a good team, but the Broncos are trying to sell it. They're a good team. The three teams the Broncos beat, I believe, all had 0 wins entering yesterday. So we know this is a fraudulent team. They had a chance to show themselves yesterday. They did lose their quarterback. Drew Lock wasn't great, and they lost at home to the Ravens. The Broncos' defense still played well. That offense couldn't do anything. And I think the Broncos were exposed a little bit. They will not be there at the top of that division or the top of the AFC by the end of the season.
Tampa Bay Buccaneers at New England Patriots.
And by the way, just the second career game for Lamar Jackson, over 300 yards. Buccaneers-Patriots, a lot closer than I thought it'd be. And Buccaneers get the win. Now, I thought the Buccaneers would be fine. I was wrong on this game in the sense that I said once we kick it off, it's any other football game, and the Buccaneers had the much better team. I was wrong. People are going to point to the weather. I don't think it was the weather last night for Tom Brady. That was the lowest completion percentage Tom Brady has had with the Buccaneers. I do not think it was the weather. Mac Jones completed over 70% of his passes. He was fine. I think that was the situation for Tom Brady. I mean, he was crying after the game. I don't think that was a case of the rain affecting Tom Brady. That's the worst we've seen Brady in a couple of years, and I think it was because of the emotions or the moment or the situation, which I was surprised by. Because Tom Brady is always a stone-cold killer in the Super Bowls, right, in the biggest games. And yet last night, he was so off his game, I think it was more because of the situation. Now, credit Bill Belichick. He did a really good job. Chris Collinsworth was highlighting it throughout the broadcast. He was throwing different coverages, different plans at him every series. It was a chess match. And nobody knows Brady better than Belichick. He knows what Brady's going to try to do, and he was staying one step ahead of him. We have this debate, who deserves more credit? They both deserve a ton of credit. Yes, Tom Brady's the greatest quarterback of all time, but are we just going to forget what Bill Belichick has done defensively in his career? Go back to when he was a defensive coordinator and he shut down the Bills and that great offense in the Super Bowl. Go back to when Brady was a young pup and he shut down the greatest show on turf in the Super Bowl. Go back and look at the scores of the Patriots playoff games. Their defense was always so good. And last night was another example. The Buccaneers have a lot more talent than the Patriots. He held Brady to his worst performance statistically since he got to Tampa Bay. Even though that was a loss, I think that was a win for Belichick. Collinsworth said it at the end of the game. Felt like a draw. Yeah, I kind of agree. Tom Brady gets the win against his former team, but Belichick showed, you know what? I'm still a darn good defensive coach, and that's my specialty. You know, maybe he needed the quarterback Tom Brady, but Brady also, for that success, needed the defense of Bill Belichick. They worked great together. We don't need to give one more credit than the other. It was just a great combination, and Belichick is a great coach. I told you about the Vikings earlier. The Patriots are the same. Positive point differential, and yet they're 1-3. The Patriots and the Vikings are the only teams in the league to have a positive point differential and yet a losing record, and they're both 1-3, and they're both similar. Both lost week one because their running back had a costly fumble. Both lost a second game because of a missed field goal. For the Vikings, it was a 37-yarder. Last night, it was a 56-yarder off the uprights for the Patriots. A lot of people are giving Belichick a hard time to kick it there. I didn't really have a problem with that, going for the field goal. Rainy night, rookie quarterback, 4th and 3. It wasn't like it was 4th and 1. I know it was a career long for Folk in the rain, but he showed he had the leg. He hit the upright. And if I'm Belichick, I'm probably taking my chances again with that field goal to try to take the lead in the final minute instead of running a play on 4th down. Right? Imagine they run a play, Mac Jones gets sacked. Everybody would be going crazy. Why not try to kick the field goal there and go for the win? So I thought it was the right call. I thought it was a tough spot for the Patriots. They almost nailed the field goal, but that defense and that team played really well. Mac Jones was the more impressive quarterback last night, and that's a tough spot for him. That's the ex-boyfriend, right, coming back to town. You want to show that you're better. Mac Jones played really well last night and was a not the highest scoring game, but still an entertaining Sunday night football game. There you go. My thoughts of all the games in Week 4 of the NFL season. We'll wrap up Hour 2 when we come back. It's the More Midday Show here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers. Lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
Here she comes.
Wrapping up Hour 2 here on the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. Coming up, when can you boo? Get to that here on the Morrow Midday Show. If you ever miss anything from the show, you can always catch it on demand. Just search ESPN Radio Charleston however you listen to your podcast. Gave my main takeaway from every game of Week 4 of the NFL season last segment. You can find that on demand. ESPN Radio Charleston wherever you listen to your podcast. We just closed out last segment talking about Brady, the Patriots, the Buccaneers. One of my good buddies was at the game last night, diehard Patriots fan, and he did admit to booing Tom Brady with everybody else last night. I think that's wrong. I think that's silly. I think it's being a bad fan. In fact, I think it's being almost like an uneducated fan. I think you show your stupidity if you're a Patriots fan booing Tom Brady in his return. Now, I'm a Vikings fan. I remember Brett Favre returning to Lambeau Field in 2009, and the Packers booed him as well. Now, that was a little bit of a different scenario. I think that's even worse because Favre did not want to leave Green Bay. Now, he was kind of keeping Green Bay hanging. Will he, won't he? Then he did retire. Then he said, I want to come back. They said, too bad. You know, we got Aaron Rodgers now. And he said, okay, trade me to the Vikings. So I get that part. He wanted to go to the rival. And they traded him to the Jets because he was still under contract. They said, yeah, no way are we going to trade you to our rival. And then after a year with the Jets and Favre became a free agent, he signed with the Vikings. So I get that part, too, that Favre didn't want to leave Green Bay, but once it got to that point, he did want to go to the rival. You know, Brady didn't go to the Jets, and he was a free agent. He could have signed anywhere. He didn't go to the Dolphins. So I do get that part. But I think it's pretty lousy after everything Brady did for the Patriots. I grew up in New England. Before Tom Brady, nobody cared about the Patriots. I grew up in Connecticut. We have random football fans all over Connecticut. Why? Because people would rather choose a random team than root for the Patriots back then. Now, the Patriots were terrible. Thank Belichick. Be grateful for Belichick and Brady. And to boo him in his return, I think is silly. But it got me thinking on a more local, in a more local situation. To try to come up with the best comparison here for South Carolina, for this state. It'd be like if Dabo left Clemson and I guess went to Alabama. Now, the Buccaneers are not a rival. I kind of consider Alabama and Clemson, right? They're like direct competitors now on the top of college football. They may not be quote-unquote rivals. I think that's kind of more similar to Favre going to the Vikings. But to play out this scenario, let's say Dabo, because of all the rumors, let's just say, hypothetically speaking, he chooses to go to Alabama. And he goes to Alabama and plays out just like Brady. He wins a national championship year one in Alabama. Does not face Clemson. But then year two faces Clemson at Clemson. This would never happen. They would never schedule this game. But say year two of Dabo at Alabama, he comes back to Clemson to take on the Tigers. Regular season matchup. First time Dabo returns. Would you boo him? I would hope not. I think that would be silly. Yeah, sure, he left you, but before then, he gave you everything you could ever have dreamed of. Right? The job that Dabo did to elevate Clemson. Much like Brady and Belichick, what they've done for the Patriots. They've turned them now into a national brand. Go back 25 years ago, you couldn't care less about the Patriots with those ugly uniforms, and they were playing in a dumpy stadium, and Drew Bledsoe was their quarterback, right? And Pete Carroll at one time was the coach before he was Pete Carroll. You should be thankful, even if he leaves, even if he does beat you. I get this idea of, well, now he's the competitor once the game starts. Maybe you don't cheer for him, but I don't think you boo him. Just like if Dabo ever leaves Clemson, if he comes back to Clemson, I hope he doesn't get booed. Remember, done for you. And be thankful that it happened, even if they leave. Hour 3 next.